RN, your world unfolding.
G'day, Paul Barclay here with you tonight on RN. Thanks for joining me. You're with Big Ideas, which you can also podcast via iTunes or check out via our website at abc.net.au/radionational. If you like what we do, you really should subscribe. Did you know there are 27 million slaves in the world today? Incredible, isn't it? Slavery is not something that died out centuries ago. Rather, it's a dire reality today for many men, women, and particularly children. Some are transported from home to another country. Many are enslaved close to their place of birth, trapped by systems that permit child trading, sex slaves, debt bondage, and forced marriage. Other forms of slavery, like domestic service or organ trafficking, have only recently been recognised as such. Roscoe Howell is author of Australians and Modern Slavery, and he spoke about the subject and how we can bring about change at the Bob Hawke Prime Ministerial Centre in Adelaide. Roscoe Howell.
I want to think with you what we mean by slavery. The forms of slavery identified by the United Nations are as follows. On the best estimate we've got, using those definitions, something like 27 million people are trapped in some form of modern slavery. Some are born into slavery. People alive today have been born into slavery. Others are trapped by child labour, child soldiering, child trading, debt slavery or debt-bonded labour, forced labour, forced marriage, human trafficking, organ trafficking, labour trafficking, and forcing or slavery in war. Defining slavery, there's lots of violence and abuse and exploitation in the world. Slavery is different. Slavery happens when one person exercises ownership over another. And it's that exercise of ownership that makes slavery a crime against humanity. There is a change of state. It's not like there's a gradation from a little bit exploited to most exploited. There is a change of state from free to unfree. And that is how slavery is defined. Slavery is not an accident. It happens because someone makes a profit. Slavery is a global business, sometimes run by local enterprises, sometimes run by larger ones, more organised. Now, those of you, are any of you lawyers in your background? A few. You'll remember the ancient Roman question, who benefits, qui bono? And there are some photos I'm going to be showing, and I want you to think about, in each of those photos, who is benefiting here? And I also want you to think, who pays, who bears the cost? When I speak on slavery, sometimes I carry two sets of chains with me and I rattle them. Because there are two, in our analysis, two classes of people who are trapped by slavery. Some have been born into slavery. Now, if you've never owned what you make, you don't own your clothes, you don't own the next meal that's being put on the table, your first question, if someone comes along and says, would you, madam, like to be liberated? Your first question might be, well, yes, but who's going to feed my children tonight? On the other hand, if I have been trapped, lost my freedom, if I've been trapped into slavery in that way, the issue for me in being emancipated might be overcoming the violence, the abuse that has led to my capture and has kept me entrapped. So people born into slavery, people who are trapped. And in the book, we go through the different modes of emancipation that might be used for each of those classes of people. At the end, we're going to invite you to speak about your experience. Some of you will have been to countries where you think there might be slavery. And I've asked the director, Elizabeth Ho, to pose that as the first question that all of us can respond to. It might be you've met a person whom slavery has touched. It might be you've been to a country where you think slavery might exist. It might be that your contact is at second level through a movie or a book or a story. All of those experiences are relevant to our understanding of how slavery plays out in the world. Now, in particular, in the book, we go through the ways in which Australians might meet each form of slavery. And we think Australians encounter slavery in three ways. We obviously encounter it in this country. Some of you may not know that. But there have been some very significant trials to do with enslavement in this country. There are criminal scams operating. There are scams around trafficking and other labour scams operating in the country. There are cultural practices that might be introduced. One of them that's on the radar at the moment, because the Attorney General, Federal Attorney General, is consulting with the nation about how we address the question of forced marriage that is starting to emerge as an issue here in Australia. There's also past experience. Now, a year ago, 15 months ago, I ran a session for Attorney Generals, Multicultural South Australia, here in Adelaide, about the experience that people might have had as humanitarian entrants on their way to this country, how they might have encountered slavery or some forms of slavery on their way here, trafficking, child labour, forced labour and so on. There's also the past experience of ourselves as Australians when, not much more than 100 and so years ago, there were Australians harvesting Pacific Islanders to come and work on plantations here in Australia. Now, we've begun a process of reconciliation with that. The Queensland Parliament did a sterling job about the year 2000, a bipartisan motion to begin a process of reconciliation with Pacific Islanders who still live in this country around Mackay and some of the areas north from there. Now, a second way we might encounter slavery as Australians is when we travel overseas. And almost every time I speak, there is someone in the audience who flinches or blanches and comes to me afterward and says, you know, I was in Rajasthan or Mumbai or Cambodia or somewhere, and there was a child tugging at my sleeve saying, take me, please take me, please take me with you. And the store owner or whoever it was turned back to finish the transaction, and the child was back at their workplace, and it's as if nothing had happened, and it wasn't until I heard you speak I realised what might have been happening. So in some way, we need to find a way to educate Australians more about what we might encounter and how we respond when we do encounter it. Now, there's a third way we think Australians encounter slavery, and that is when we do business or when we consume. So if I am, I won't name Pacific Dunlop, but for example, a company that is moving its manufacturing offshore. There have been examples where companies have done their due diligence to make sure that the factory they've set up in a third country will meet ILO standards. And there have been examples where the local agent has subcontracted the work to a sweatshop. So due diligence doesn't stop with the day the factory door opens. Due diligence needs to continue all the time, and as shareholders, we Australians need to be mindful of that need. As individuals, we come across aspects of slavery when we consume fair trade chocolate, tea, coffee, but it doesn't stop there. I have in my home two of the most beautiful, luxurious rugs from Nepal. You would die for them, except I found some years ago that the children who make these rugs end up losing their sight, many of them. Now, I didn't know that when I acquired the rugs, but I think of those children every time I use them. And some British and American people have got together to establish something called Rug Mark, a way of, if you like, certifying the rug as being ethically made and ethically traded. There's ethical trade in diamonds. Any of you see the movie Blood Diamond? Pretty scary. So as a result of that, there is now a world, a system for monitoring diamonds. It's not perfect, but it's better than what was there before. Now, forms of modern slavery. This photograph was taken in Niger, which is in West Africa, in 2003, and the woman, we know her name was Soumanya, the woman had been taken at puberty as a house slave. Niger only banned slavery in a formal way in 2003, and the process of working through that banning is still going on today. And there have been two outstanding court cases run by a group called Anti-Slavery International from Britain to get compensation for young women like this, not Soumanya, but women like her, who have been taken as slaves, and the government has failed to protect them in that, and they have sought and got compensation. There was also a case in Britain, 2011, in Hillingdon, a London borough of Hillingdon, where a five-year-old girl had been brought from Nigeria and kept as a house slave in London. And it wasn't until she escaped at age 16 that her plight was found. And the matter actually went to the Court of Appeal in Britain to get compensation for this girl and to get her access to the education that she had missed. And it had to go to court because, although she was initially received at face value, some bean counter somewhere decided, well, no, well, you can't prove you're 16, so you're not eligible, go away. And fortunately, a local youth legal service got onto the story and found. So, we can't, and I use this hand play when I speak on slavery, we point the finger at those naughty, naughty people in Niger. And when we point like that, how many fingers are pointing back at me? That hand play is intended to invite us to reflect on ourselves. In this case, not us as individuals, but our culture is allowing children to be traded, to be used as domestic servants, and instances surface closer to home than we might be pleased to admit. Child labour. Now, this child is called Anna, and not tonight, but in a longer session, we do what I would call an occupational health and safety audit on Anna's work station. And you can see those delicate little fingers are right beside a grinder. The grinder has no guard. Anna has no goggles. There's no dust suppression system. And the list goes on. You'd be surprised if you're in a room with OH&S people. They pick this photo to bits. They really go to town on it. And the UN documents tell us that, in fact, there are cases where the fact that a child is dependent and small and nimble and has little fingers is actually a selling feature. They are chosen to work because they can do stuff that adults can't, and they are placed at risk. Now, not every child labourer is a slave, and the fact that you are working in difficult circumstances or being exploited, that doesn't make you a slave. Slavery is defined in terms of ownership. But there are numbers floating around in the order of 10 million estimates, 10 million children actually trapped in slavery. Now, I haven't seen the original research. The numbers come out of different organisations. But we hear lots of child labour, only some of them are slaves, and that's the take-home message. So children exploited and abused, how many are enslaved? Child soldiers. This photograph was taken in Sri Lanka at a time when the LTTE, the Tamil Tigers, were proud of the fact that they could call on child soldiers in their campaign. The UN estimates that there are something like 300,000 child soldiers in the world at any one time. The numbers go up and down a bit as one conflict ends, another begins, and child soldiers are recruited. Now, in our region, there are the physical presence of child soldiers left over from the conflict in Sri Lanka, the conflict that's been recently, we've taken some steps to settle along the border in Burma, Myanmar, and Nepal. It's estimated something like 40,000 child soldiers left over from that conflict. Now again, not pointing the finger overseas, but thinking who we are and how we relate, I come across families in Australia who've lost children, boys and girls, to child soldiery. And those families grieve because many of them don't know what happened to their child. Did the child survive? How was the child misused? And so on. And those families come from Afghanistan and Congo, Sri Lanka, Sierra Leone, Burma, Nepal, Sudan, and other countries. And part of my work is going around talking to non-government organisations and government to say our services need to be mindful of the experiences that people have, not just the personal experience, the direct experience of being trapped in some way, but the grief and the ongoing loss of families who've been affected and can't resolve the issue.
Roscoe Howe, speaking about modern-day slavery. You're listening to Big Ideas, where you hear the best talks and forums on the issues that matter. If you head to our website, you'll find an extensive back catalogue of our talks and forums from around Australia and around the world. You really should check it out. There's some great stuff you might have missed. Our website, abc.net.au/radionational. You'll find us on the program menu. Let's head back now to Adelaide, where Roscoe Howe looks at what you and I can do to stop slavery.
Another point for Australia is our civics really make a difference. I know we talk about ourselves in a joking way sometimes about being a nanny state, but I see states where good governance is broken down. Our processes for conflict resolution in this country. Sometimes we get grumpy because they're a bit ponderous. Well, they work. Social inclusion. And each of the countries I can think of where these civil conflicts have developed in such a way that child soldiers get used. These three things in particular have broken down. Governance through corruption, conflict resolution through crony government, and social inclusion, one group thinking they're better than another. We have treasures in Australia and they are our principles of government. Never let them go. Child trading. This girl is being traded. And we know that because the photograph was taken by a particular international agency. The man on the left is a local patriarch. We don't know whether he's the village leader or, you know, an uncle or a father. The man on the right is a trader, and the girl, you can see the look of expectancy. She's in her utterly very best coat. She looks just beautiful in the hope of getting a job from this village that is utterly impoverished. Now, child trading is defined in this way, where a child or young person is delivered by a parent or guardian with a view to exploitation of his or her labour. Delivered by a parent or guardian. How can that possibly happen? Well, if you are utterly dirt poor and granny dies, let's say, and you know that granny's immortal soul and prospect of being reincarnated depends on being buried in the correct way, the family needs money, or granny is in peril for the rest of her life. In the alternative, it might be you live in a village where there's no toilets and no fresh water, and the children are constantly getting diarrheic diseases. They die for want of a very little bit of medicine and a very little bit of fresh water. So these families are under enormous pressure to find just that little bit extra in the way of resources. And who better to find those resources than the oldest child? And they are placed in this ancient child trading system. This is not the modern child trafficking that we hear about. This is an ancient, persistent system of child trading where families who are dirt poor placed a child in the hope of getting resources to enable them to keep the show on the road. And they might be promised, well, your child will be going to a good home, maybe look over the shoulder of someone who's doing their homework or whatever. whatever the prospect is, it's probably better than what they came from. Unfortunately, these children are now being exploited for other purposes. This girl was being sold into domestic service, and in 2008 it were reported to be something like 10 million children trapped in domestic service. Now in 2011, June 2011, there was an ILO treaty. ILO stands for International Labour Organization. An ILO treaty negotiated to turn domestic service into work. Very, very simple guidelines. Instead of being, well, you're the servant, you get to sleep under the stairs and you work in return for your food. No. You work 6 days, you get 1 day off. You are paid real money, not in kind. You are paid in the current time period, not at some time in the future. And your travel documents, you get to hold your own travel documents, and so on. So changing the power relationship between a servant and a worker, and I think this is actually one of the most significant treaties that's been negotiated in the last couple of decades, because it recognises the sort of service work that women do. It recognises service as work. I think this is a really special treaty. Now, debt bondage. This photograph is taken in a brickworks in Pakistan. It's called the Peshki system in northern India. There are different forms of debt bondage. The central figure in the photograph is carrying 10 bricks. Now, a brick weighs 9 pounds. 10 times 9 is 90 pounds, and that is the weight of a pack that our SAS soldiers carry at the peak of their fitness. How old is that child, do you think? Make a guess. 12, did I hear? Nodding. 12. Carrying the same weight as an SAS soldier at the peak of fitness. Debt bondage can hardly be distinguished from traditional slavery because it prevents the victim from leaving until the money is repaid. Normally, the debt is inherited by the bonded labourer's children. If you Google contemporary forms of slavery at the UN, you will find those words and others describing each of these forms of slavery. The consultation that is running at the moment that the Attorney General has initiated takes account of the fact that there is now the possibility and evidence of debt bondage here in Australia. When I grew up, Australia was a generous country and we had something called the Colombo Plan, where we gave away the possibility of an education here. Then the bean counters got hold of that program and decided we could make a profit, as indeed we do. And there is evidence of people paying some tens of thousands of dollars for the visa and other arrangements to come here. Who do you think they're borrowing the money from? If that debt then gets sold to the corrupt cronies or the Tongs or the Triads in their country of origin, that honest, hard-working student is now vulnerable. No one did it to us, we did it to ourselves. And anywhere I go where I speak in a university setting, I say one of the things we need to do is look to the welfare of our international students because they are potentially vulnerable. It's happened on a scale in Europe. There's no reason to think it hasn't happened here. Forced labour. We're in May 2012. In May 1945, World War II had just ended. This is a picture from a camp near Hanover of some forced labour inmates who had been freed, survived through to the end of the war. This man, you can't see the scars very clearly, but forced labour is, I won't say endemic, but not uncommon in parts of South America, Brazil, for example. This photograph was taken in Burma. How old is she, do you think? 9, 8, 9, something like that. She has a shovel, she's been working on a pile of sand, she's got no boots, she's got no gloves. Now, there's a three-way cost in that photo. She's doing hard work without protection. She's not going to school. And who's getting the benefit? Not her, not her family, but the corrupt cronies who have got, in some way, the license to build a tourist project. Now, there is change coming in Burma, and Australia is engaging with Burma, and this girl, 8, 9, whatever age she is, and girls like her, she is the test of whether that policy of engagement works or not. If she gets school, if the benefits of the family effort accrue to the family, then that is a change worth commending. Forced marriage. This is a photo, this in Germany got a Photo of the Year award, but again is a stereotype. In any case, forced marriage raises an issue of gender equity and consent. In effect, women are owned. They are treated as property. The final form of this list is slavery and war. And the woman on the bottom left there is Lisa Jackson, who is about, I'm holding my arm out at shoulder height. Lisa is a New York filmmaker who took herself into the jungle in East Kivu province in the Democratic Republic of Congo. War's been raging there for decades. Anyone heard about East Kivu province and the war? A couple of heads nodding. So Lisa took herself into the jungle, sound man, fixer, camera, and interviewed soldiers and militia who had committed multiple rapes to find out what they'd done and why. Talk about brave. Now, that DVD is called The Greatest Silence, and it is procurable if you Google it, you'll find it. Trafficking. Trafficking is defined in a different way from the other forms of slavery. Trafficking is a crime. Trafficking is a scam because so much deception is used that no meaningful consent can be given. There are organ trafficking scams. There are migrant worker scams. There are sex industry scams. And the person I'm showing there in the centre is Dee McLaughlin, a filmmaker who made that film The Jammed, set in Melbourne, but it could have been in any capital city in Australia, about a couple of women working in the sex industry, two of whom had been trafficked. Very powerful story. Now I want to touch briefly on engines of slavery. There are four, in our analysis, four engines that drive modern slavery. If you Google slavery and causes, you'll come up with poverty as the pat answer. We think it's a bit more complex than that. While poverty is an issue, so is powerlessness. So those of you who saw Slumdog Millionaire, just remind me, who saw Slumdog, quite a few hands going up. You're living in that slum, I come along and give you a fridge. You've got a fridge, but your situation in life hasn't changed in any material way. You are still powerless. This child is carrying rice in Nepal for Western tourists. Where's the power relationship there, do you think? So we say poverty and powerlessness and crime corruption. The child in the singlet, Rambo, has been rescued from an illegal rug factory where he was trapped after his father died, and a local ashram did a raid, if you like, in cooperation with the local law enforcement authorities. Rambo there looks thin and he's had a dreadful time. 6 months later, the before and after shot, he's on the road to recovery. But that illegal rug factory could only continue if there was corruption that enabled it to continue. Slavery is a crime, and it is enabled to continue through corruption. Conflict. This woman and her daughter are in a camp recovering after the conflict in Rwanda. The photo was taken, I think, 10 or 12 years after the genocide had taken place, and the mother is there standing firm with her daughter. Conflict generates new cohorts of slaves, whether they're child soldiers. People, families get displaced from their land, people get trafficked, and so on. Now, This is Catherine Branson, who the director reminded us is going to be speaking here in a couple of weeks' time. The Honourable Catherine Branson QC is President of the Human Rights Commission, and she's an Adelaide person. And when I speak in schools, there are some people I show as people making a difference, and she's one of them as a model for students. Now, if you go through the papers of the Human Rights Commission, their message can be summarised in 10 words. Every person has equal rights just by being born human. You don't have to negotiate for your rights. You don't have to earn them. You are born with them because you are born human. Some very powerful work being done at the Australian Human Rights Commission, and they've provided a context in which people like me can operate more effectively, and I'm very grateful to them. Now, slavery is a big issue. I try to balance talk about the problem with talk about how to arrive at solutions. The question is, what can one do? How do we go about it? Anyone can buy fair trade. It costs a bit more, but there's no emotional investment. You go to the supermarket, you do it. Researching, questioning, writing, making a video. The material's out there. If we're working in a school or in a university context, or at work indeed, it might be we can investigate, explore how the sort of work we do is related to slavery in some way. We can change Australian laws, and there are processes of review going on all the time. I mentioned forced marriage and debt bondage as two of the review processes being run currently. Solidarity with local cooperatives. There are co-ops like Usha India or SEWA, the Self-Employed Women's Association. People who have been totally marginalised and excluded from mainstream life, who bit by tiny bit are taking power and building a new life as a group for themselves in the most difficult circumstances. We can stand in solidarity with those people. In country law and governance, AusAid, the Australian International Aid Organisation, encourages the development of better systems for governance, but also we can pass laws here in Australia, as happened a couple of years ago. It is now a crime in Australia for an Australian to go overseas and have sex with children. That is a crime here in this country. And the Australian Federal Police have been doing a great job advertising that as the new rules of the game. It's not a game, it's slavery, and it's not acceptable. Redesign the world trade system. Now, if I had said this even 3 or 4 years ago, there was a titter ran through the crowd because what an extraordinary thing to suggest. But it's not theory, it is actually happening. And if you Google RUGGI, R-U-G-G-I-E, the RUGGI process, or the Global Compact, United Nations Global Compact, C-O-M-P-A-C-T, there has been a set of international agreements that business will begin to express human rights in the way we do business in this country and overseas. And that's not just Australia, that is international. So there is change, baby steps, but we have made a start. Thank you.
Roscoe Howell encourages us to buy fair trade tea, coffee and chocolate. These products may cost more, but he believes fair trade is a simple way to help promote just working conditions. Time now for some audience comments and questions moderated by Elizabeth Ho, Director of the Bob Hawke Prime Ministerial Centre.
We do have time for some questions, but as Roscoe announced earlier, I'm going to begin by asking you if any among you feel that you may have been in the presence of slavery in your travels or in any other way. Is there anyone who has recognised the potential of that?
We went to India and volunteered over there for eight months at a railway station. We saw a lot of potential slavery, but I guess this is one area that was fairly obvious, that we're at a railway station and these kids were begging, and they were basically forced to beg. They had no education. They had no, I guess, potential of a future. I think their mum was putting them out there to do begging to raise money for their family. That, amongst, I guess, a myriad of other experiences in India, sort of showed us that there's plenty out there that are in need of, I guess, action in the West.
There's a place in Singapore called Geylang where you can see literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of girls standing on the street, working girls, shoulder to shoulder.
Two places. One in Malaysia, they had children in a factory, and they're very, very young and in unsafe conditions. And in Indonesia, and Indonesia was probably even more troubling, two very young girls being brought into a hotel for a Western man, which is probably not a good idea for him when made some few inquiries about that one. And there was a mother begging, and one of the locals told me that the children that she had weren't hers and she used them for begging, and yeah, it was very sad to see.
Thank you for those comments. I think we've got one more here.
Yes, I'm currently concerned about some of our... I know families where people are sponsoring other family members to come out to Australia from Pakistan, and when the members of the family come out when some of them are still young teenagers, instead of being sent to school and getting an education, the family is in that double bind where they have to sort of recover some of the money for having brought them out, not on the boat but on a plane. And so the child or that person is now not perhaps going to school. And that is of great concern to me, because I don't know how much that is actually happening around Adelaide. But I'm not sure whether it's under like government radar or you know, social wealth, or someone just concerned to make sure that the people are getting the education that they need.
May I respond to those as a sort of gestalt? I've worked as a social planner for quite a few years, and that means recreation, housing, tourism, that sort of thing, where the questions are who benefits, who pays the price, who's included, who's excluded. In a sense, it's the same questions that we ask when we encounter slavery, except I'm working for different people now and not being paid. I am learning from Asia as if I knew nothing. I want you to leave tonight confident, not overwhelmed by the scale of the problem, but in each of these problems, in each country I come across, someone somewhere is doing the most extraordinary work under really, really difficult circumstances. Not only that, I, as an experienced and very well educated professional, am learning as if I knew nothing. Google, SEWA, Self-Employed Women's Association, and ASHA, ASHA-India. But SEWA, I mentioned because they have their performance appraisal up on the internet. And you can see by the things they're measuring, the tiny little baby steps that are taken for... Has anyone been to India? Have you seen what head loaders do? You know, there's a sort of a towel wrapped around, and then there's this huge load. And well, that is a very skilled occupation. But they sleep on the street. And SEWA, a Gandhian offshoot organisation, transport workers. These people are transport workers because they're carrying stuff. And SEWA, over 25 years now, has organised these people to say, well, it's not just the poverty, it's not just the way the contractors abuse you, it's not just the corruption in the system, it's not just yada, yada, yada. The list goes on. look on the internet, you will be blown away at how these people have worked. It's not a quick fix. This is one or two generations of change. They're the timescales we're working on. But let me assure you, everywhere I go, where it seems really dark, messy and muddy, I find someone who is doing absolutely stunning work like that.
Another one here. Thank you.
I'm just curious, you mentioned the work being done with debt bondage. I know that at a trafficking forum in 2010, SAPOL said that there was debt bondage in South Australia in the area of the sex industry. How will the work on debt bondage actually affect that on the ground in South Australia?
Do you mean... I referred to a consultation that the National, the Attorney General federally is running. That's the question that it's now Attorney General Roxon. The previous Attorney General started the consultation. Attorney General Roxon will finish it hopefully soon. I don't know what decision she will make, but I take comfort from the fact that in these official ways, the problem and the potential for a problem is being recognised. I don't know what decision she's going to make about how to respond. Is part of your question, though, how debt bondage works in the countries of origin?
Oh, no, I actually know about that. I'm just... because.
Well, if it may be there are people here who don't, could you tell the story just briefly if you've got that experience?
Okay. It's easy to get a debt if you're impoverished overseas, and it's easy to be conned into something which comes into the area of trafficking. But you can be, and I mean, some people are actually brought to Australia for the sex industry, so they know they're actually coming over to Australia for the sex industry. But when, by the time they get here, they then say you have accumulated a debt, and the debt is always unobtainable to be paid off, and so the workers then have to work. Now sometimes that's in the sex industry, or it can be in actually the building industry or in agriculture, and it is happening in South Australia. That's basically it. The thing that with my original question was, because they try to avoid the term trafficking because it is illegal, but they use the word debt bondage, which is part of the UN. Yeah.
Legally, they're different concepts, and one of the things we do in the book is go through and unpick and untangle these terms and consider how they're being used and how they're going to be useful. That was a fantastic summary of the way trafficking works. And if I can just add one small point to what you've said. Yes, women are brought here for the purposes of working in the sex industry, and if it's trafficking, so much deception is used that no meaningful consent can be given. What that means in practice is you might be in North Thailand. Would you like us to get your daughter a good job in the entertainment industry? You'll move down through Malaysia through different hands. At each stage, the debt is added to, and you're brought here under what might be a tourist visa or a student visa, and then put to work in the industry. Tough, really tough. The best estimates I've seen, and this may have changed since the last time I looked at the figures, 1,000 women trafficked into Australia at any one time. Now, there's someone here from the Red Cross. Is that figure still current? I'm looking for you to nod or shake your head. You're nodding? Is that close enough? Okay. Now, I want you to compare labour trafficking. A man, a barrister called Stephen Hauser, no relation, not a member of my family, but did a report recently for the Minister for Immigration, and he's found somewhere between 50,000 and 100,000 people brought to Australia and working under the radar in industry, as you said, farm, building, other work. And those people, of course, are vulnerable. Because if you're flying under the radar, you're subject to pressure from criminals to do something that you might not think is entirely legal. So thank you. That was a really great summary. I appreciate it.
You just mentioned this before about things going under the radar, so some forms of bond slavery going under the radar. How do you think that creates difficulty in actually solving the issue if it goes undetected?
Do you know, I don't know how to... That's a fantastic question. It goes right to the heart of things. How do we detect and how do we measure what's going on? And I came across some figures, just as I was bringing the book to a conclusion, I came across some figures from the United States. The Department of Justice reporting police statistics on finding trafficking victims. And look, I forget the figures, I can find the table after we've finished this session, but let's say it was, on the police figures, a majority, 60 or 70 or more percent, were sex trafficking victims. The victim support groups that are funded in a different way report the same number, more or less, as labour trafficking victims. So it depends who we are and what our role is and what we're looking for as to what we find. So that question goes to the heart of what we define as a problem, how we measure it, who we give the job of finding. Fantastic question. That's the best answer I can give at this stage, that we're finding these disparities in the data that tell us we haven't got it right yet. Thank you.
Have you ever witnessed slavery, maybe while holidaying, like some of the audience members? Let us know about your experiences. You can tweet at RNBigIdeas or post your views online on our website, abc.net.au/Radio National. Follow the prompts to the Big Ideas page. We do read out on-air correspondence fairly regularly. Tonight you've been listening to Roscoe Howell, Public Officer of Slavery Links Australia and the author of Australians and Modern Slavery. He was talking at the Bob Hawke Prime Ministerial Centre.